Good evening. Tonight's year is being a refuah shlema for Chaya Malka Bas Basheva. We wish her a speedy recovery. By the way, just as an aside, the name Basheva is interesting because a lot of people who are named Basha don't realize that that is where Basheva comes from. Basha is an offshoot of Basheva, not Basia, just as an aside for those people who call themselves Basha. Nevertheless, let's get back to the story at hand, the parsha. The Shalach is extremely interesting and bears a lot of questions. Just in the first pasuk alone, when it says "Vayhi b'shalach paro es ha'om," this is Rabbi Mayevsky, by the way. I keep forgetting to mention it. "Vayhi b'shalach paro es ha'om v'lo nachom elokim derech eretz plishtim ki karov hu ki amar elokim pen yonochem ha'om b'rosom milchamo v'shov mitzrayim." It makes it sound like initially the plan might have been to go derech eretz plishtim, but because it was either too close, on one level we could determine that the land of Israel would only be an eight-day trip at this point, and if they would ever choose to go back to Egypt, it would be easily done, just an eight-day trip, or that it was too soon to encounter a battle with the Plishtim. But if that were the case, then what would happen to Matan Torah at Har Sinai? And what would happen to Kriyas Yamsuf? It wouldn't have had to take place. So therefore, this was always in the card. The sea was meant to split from Maisa Bereishis. When God created the world, he decreed that it would split on the 21st day of Nisan in the year 2448 on the calendar, and therefore, obviously, they had to go this way. So then what is this all about in general? But of course, this is what God is telling us. He couldn't do this in the first place. Now, I entitled the shiur, "Look Where You're Going." It could have a monumental effect on your life, certainly, but we'll get to that. And this is where it all goes. As I mentioned in the previous few shiurim, that God's plan all the time was to get the Bnei's, to get the Mitzrayim to follow the Jews into the Yam, to have Kriyas Yamsuf, since that was forecast from creation, and that was the plan. So everything is geared towards that. But how do we arrive at that? And the one thing that is necessary to mention is that what does it mean when we finish off in the end of Va'era, and then in Bo, we see so many times the Pasuk says, and this week, previously we see Vayechazek Hashem, that God hardened the heart of Paro. There are so many questions asked, and one of the questions basically is, God gave everybody Bechira, and we take it for granted that it means Vayechazek Hashem, God literally hardened his heart, but it doesn't necessarily mean that exactly. It means that God held out a carrot to him, in other words, gave him some sort of, you know, thing to look for. In other words, giving him a carrot to say, well, I'm going to change my mind because this and this happened. And the thing that would change his mind at this point in time, when it says, Vayinaslu es Mitzrayim, what saved them is the fact that they were able to, it says, Vayishalu mi Mitzrayim klei chesef klei zahav, they borrowed the gold and silver from the Mitzrayim. And now when Vayirdof acharei b'nei Yisrael, what was the reason that they now chased after the Jews, when it says, Vayeofech levav paro vavodov elo'om, the paro and his servants and many of the people, a lot of the regular populace followed along, because they weren't at this point in time, after God had rained upon him the ten makos, they realized maybe the reign of their 210 years over the Jews had come to an end. But now that the Jews took out all their gold and silver, and this was what I mean by the carrot that was held out by Paro to drive them to the sea, to follow the Jews out there. And because they realized that as long as they were leaving them, they wanted to get back their gold and silver. And that's a very interesting thought process, that that was the reason that God did it, besides to give them the money that they deserved. But this is what is the Vishalu Ishmael Esrayehu Vishav Meesru saw their neighbors, the Egyptian neighbors, they were to spur the neighbors, they saw the Mitzrayim, saw the Jews borrowing from each other, and that was sort of doing it. See, this whole idea of everybody getting together, and they gave them all this gold, Vayashilum, and they lent it to them. And now this was the thing. They meant to kill the Jews now, but their idea was to get back all the gold and silver. And Paro promised all the people that would, all the gold and silver that they would retrieve from the Jews, they would divide it among the people who would follow him to get back, not to take the Jews back, that they were going to kill them. And this is what I mean. It does not mean that he literally took away their bechira, but he gave them some impetus to make this happen. And this is what happened with all of the other makos. He changed his mind because of something that they saw that said, oh, you said this, and this is what happened. In other words, like we say, Vayhi b'chatzi alayla, in kachatzi alayla, Moshe had to change up all these things, and we'll get to the whole idea where this goes. But getting back to this point, what I wanted to make, we have, when they get to the Yam Suf, the very interesting thing happens that we see. Till now, we've seen the terminology Yod Chazakah. We've seen the terminology of the Chozek Yod. And these are very interesting terms. And I've explained it before. But this week we see a whole new terminology, Yod HaGedolah. And what is the difference between Chozek Yod and the Yod HaGedolah? Chozek Yod means, of course, a very powerful hand. And Yod HaGedolah, Yod Chazakah. The difference is, as I once explained, that one is to literally beat somebody over the head, and the other one is literally to take a big, let's say you took a telephone pole and bent it in front of the other person, and he sees your power. In other words, the makos, even when they weren't before or after, the point was for the Jews to see his Yod HaChazakah, the Chozek Yod, they see the power that God has, even if it doesn't rain down upon them. They see his power. But the Yod HaGedolah is, we see something that's very interesting. What happened at the Yam Suf that heretofore has not happened yet? And that's a very interesting thing. It says, Vayaminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe avdo. Previously, we had in Parshas Shemos, when Moshe gave them the signs at the beginning, it says, Vayamein ha'am. But what did they really believe? At that point in time, they believed that Moshe had been sent perhaps to take them out, but they didn't, or they believed in the miracles that he performed with the snake, with the mateh. But nevertheless, they didn't believe in the whole scenario, how long it would take, or what exactly how it would transpire. But now, by Aminu b'Hashem of Moshe Avdo, the Amin that really only now when the sea split, they would finally believe in God? Obviously not. But what they saw for the first time was something very interesting. The 10 makos that transpired in the land of Egypt, they had to do nothing of any note. They didn't have to put their life on the line or do anything in particular other than painting blood on the doorpost for Makos Bechoros, which took no special serious nefesh in any way, shape, or form. But they went ahead. It was like a Disney light show. They sat back and they watched all the makos happen. But now at Kriyas Yam Suf, they were standing at the precipice of the sea and all afraid that they were going to drown, that the Mitzrayim were going to drive them into the sea, and they didn't know what would happen. And nothing did happen until Nachshon, as we're told. The Gemara discusses whether it was only Nachshon or they were fighting who should be the first, or that it was only Nachshon that had that attitude of give me liberty or give me death. And he believed in God and he jumped. And he jumped into the sea and then it split. At that point, they realized that there is such a thing as if you quid pro quo, if you're willing to risk your life for me, then I will rain upon you all of the good fortune that it has. The sea can split, but you have to jump in first. And this was by Aminu b'Hashem of Moshe Avdo. But more than that, when God tells Moshe, V'yato kaches matcha v'horei mes yodcha, pick up, to pick up your stick over the sea, to pick up your stick, and this time it doesn't tell him just to raise the stick, the mateh, he tells him to raise his hand also, because he wants them to see that it's not just the stick that has any power, it's not a magic wand, it is God's power, to raise your hand up to the heavens, uv ko'eyu, and then it'll split, because now they finally believe that up to this point in time, all they see is Moshe waving his magic wand and all the miracles transpire. But at this point in time, they see that since it was Nachshon that jumped in and the sea split, then it's Vayaminu Bashem. They finally believed in God, but they also at this juncture believe that Moshe was not necessarily a God, a supernatural human being. Moshe was, not to say an ordinary person, but basically a human being who was Moshe Avdo. We could just say Vayaminu Bashem Uva Moshe. But Vayaminu Bashem Uva Moshe Avdo, they believe that now Moshe was his servant, that he was just a means to an end. He was an intermediary, and God was the owner of all the power that everything emanated from, and that's why God brought forth all the things in the Midbar, the Mon and the Mayim. He wanted them to get used to, and they needed this time, unfortunately, for them to finally have their faith in God only and not in idols. The idol worship that they never, most of them, or some of them at least, never really abandoned, but little by little, after so much time in the Midbar, to see that they were able to have the Mon for all that time and the water for all that time emanating. And don't forget, even after they were moving, how did the water follow them? That means every day Moshe had to hit the rock again, or how did it work? The Mon, wherever they would be, the Mon would fall only in that place. It's an incredible scenario, and that's what it's all about. But the Yonah Gedola is the big picture, as opposed to that they finally see that all the things that transpired all this time, that this story had to be, they're only Derech Shloshish Yamim Nelech Bamidbar, it had to be because the end scenario was to drive them to the sea. But if, as we said in the first pasuk, it says, Vayhi b'shalach paro esam v'lo nacham elokim Derech Eretz Plishtim, he didn't want them to have to endure a war with Plishtim because it was too soon. They just left, and now they're going to have to fight a war right away. Why would they? God was afraid that they would say, that's enough. We've had enough. We'll just go back. But only a week later, it says at the end of the parasha, Vayavo Amolek. So how does that happen? Why does God let that happen at the time? Well, we'll get back to that. But nevertheless, God allows that Vayavo Amolek, and they would stand out. And even though they didn't defeat them totally, they just beat them back. And for a time anyhow, until sometime in the future, but they withstood the onslaught of Amalek. But why did God let that happen? The difference is at that point in time was after Kriyas Yamsuf, and the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf gave them that amount of chizuk that God knew at this point in time they could withstand the battle with Amalek. It wouldn't change their belief system in God. But the question is, why did that happen? And we see actually when it says Umatei Elokim Biyado, it doesn't tell us anywhere that God told Moshe anything to do when Vayavo Amalek Vayelachim Yisrael Birfidim. Why did that happen? And of course, it follows what we're saying Hayesh Hashem Bikirbeinu Amayim, and as a penance for that, as a punishment, God had Amalek. Now the question is, did Amalek come out to greet them, so to speak, to go to war with them? It seems, according to some of the Mefarshim, historians as well, would like to say, in those days it was commonplace when you wanted to have a battle with somebody, you wanted to go to war with a nation, you would declare war, send a messenger, and declare war. And here is Vayavo Amalek; they just came upon the Jews. According to one parish, it's very interesting that they happened to be, of course, a lot of these people who didn't live in one place. They would move around, and Vayavo Amalek, they were in the midst of moving, and they happened upon the Jews at this point in time. But since they were the children of Amalek, Amalek was the children of Esav, the grandson, they understood that only they could survive if the Jews were downtrodden. And at this point in time, they figured the Oyef Yogea, the Jews had been very weak at this time, and they were afraid that the Jews would overtake them now. And they had been living high on the hog for the last 210 years. The Jews were enslaved, and they felt good. And now the Jews were leaving Mitzrayim, and they became fearful. And at this point in time, they decided the time was ripe to attack the Jews without any warning whatsoever. which goes against the mores of the time. But so now that they see the big picture, they see that. But God is upset with them, obviously, over that. Excuse me one second. The next thing I'd like to say, so we always have to be concerned. So this is what was very interesting about going to the Red, going into the sea. We would think at this point in time, you have the Amud Eish Laila and the Amud Anon. What was the purpose over there? The Amud Anon, Yomam, the Amud Eish Laila. But if you notice, when they got to the sea, the Amud Anon was there as well, and that was there to obscure the vision of between the Jews and they. So God did not want them to see the Amud Ha'esh, and that would make them afraid to go into the sea. But when the cloud was lifted in the morning, and they decided to just chase after the Bnei Yisrael into the sea, do you think for 1 minute that they should have looked where they were going? Perhaps they would see after the 10 makos that God rained down upon them in Mitzrayim, that they see, as the Gemara explains, this wall of water, and it does a mathematical computation in the Gemara of how high that water had to be, because the water flow in the world keeps on going, and the wall of water kept rising into this block of ice, so to speak. And not only that, but the V'hamayim lohem choma doesn't just mean, miminomu mismolom, it doesn't just mean the to the right and the left. When you have to think about it, when you walk into a body of water, the ground, you descend into the depths, whether the water over there was 20 feet, 50 feet, 100 feet, but it's an incline. And if you're going with wagons and animals and children, that would be an almost impossible feat. And therefore, what happened is, V'hamayim lohem choma, the Abarbanel makes it say that the ground rose up and the water became sort of like a high ground for them to walk on flat land. And after that was over, do you think if the Egyptians had any sense at this point in time, they would decide probably this is not a good idea to follow the Jews into the Yam Suf? Is a little bit insane, perhaps. So this is what I mean by just look where you're going. And they could have avoided so much death. And what would happen, they could have just said, we're not following them. That would have been, does anybody, how come nobody would say to themselves, this is a bad idea? After we see what God was able to do to us in Mitzrayim, and now they, the sea split, and they went through the other side, and there's a wall of water right and left. Doesn't seem like a good idea to follow the Jews at this point in time. They just had to look where they're going. They didn't see that they're going down into a sea and that they would all be killed, or certainly it should have been on their mind. But the point is, they had blinders on. Their hatred for the Jew at this point had grown to such levels that they just weren't looking where they were going. And that is, unfortunately, in our lives sometimes, if we would just stop and think sometimes about what we're about to do, before we do it, we could see this, what we call today, risk and reward. The risk of, you know, you want to get back all your gold and silver, but what is the risk? The risk is dying and never be able to achieve what you're going for. The goals were not attainable at this point. And what is it talking about? If they're all going to die, then why does it say, V'yadu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem? What good is anybody knowing? But, of course, not everybody followed. Not all the Egyptians followed, and the story would get back to them. Of course, probably some of the Erevrav who told Paro, V'yugad l'melech Mitzrayim ki barach ha'om? Who actually, how did Paro find out that they were running away? Because there were Erevrav. Some say there were spies that Paro sent along with them. But the Erev Rav, who saw that they weren't slaughtering, they weren't doing their avoda, as they said, and they went back to Mitzrayim and told Paro. And therefore, when they saw them circling around, these are all the things that, as I keep saying, the carrot that would give Paro some impetus to go and chase the Jews to the sea. And this is God's point all along from the very beginning. Now, the interesting thing, once again, there's a lot of things over here that we say a lot of times when we say Hallel on Pesach. We know on the last days of Pesach, we say, of course, we don't say it on Chol HaMoed either, whole Hallel, even though we would. But since we don't say it on the seventh day of Pesach, we say half Hallel, because we say Masa Yodav Tavu V'Yom, Masa Yodai Tavu V'Yom V'Atem Omer Shira, and you're singing Shira. So the Malkei Asher, but what God is telling the Malkei Asher is Bnei Yisrael, they could sing Shira. They were the ones who sacrificed their lives, who were willing to jump into the Yam Suf to save themselves, who lived through the Golus, who lived through the exile in Mitzrayim. You, Malkei Ashoreis, when you're saying to God, he's saying to them, Masa Yodai Tavu B'Yom V'Atem Omer Shira. In other words, what did you do? You're Malkei Ashoreis. You're sitting here in perfect safety over here. You're sitting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Your life is on a line. It's the human beings that are down there that are risking their lives. And that is the important part over here. And so when we say Masa Yodai Tavu V'Yom V'Atem Omer Shira, Bnei Yisrael is Oz Yashir Moshe Bnei Yisrael. They have the right to sing Shira. Those who suffer have a right to enjoy the end result when they see Vayar Yisrael Es Mitzrayim Meisal Tzfas Hayom. Now they see their enemies are vanquished and it is finally over. They don't have to worry about looking over their shoulder ever again. And this is what they see, the Yod HaGdola once again. It's the big picture. And as I always like to point out, the only other person besides the Bnei Yisrael now who saw the big picture was Yosef HaTzadik, who saw after he got his brothers to come down, he saw the big picture of everything that transpired in his life. And but still in all, we get the end of the parsha when it says, Vayoa Amalek, because now Amalek, God sees that the Hayesh Hashem Bekirbenu, they were fighting. If this unity in Bnei Yisrael, we can survive anything. But Hayesh Hashem Bekirbenu Amayim, even at that point, if the Kriyas Yamsuf, there were factions of Jews who were complaining, whether it was for their food, whether it was for water. They didn't believe that God wasn't up to, had an agenda, perhaps, that there weren't enough Hamibliyin Kvarim B'Mitzrayim, which is an outrageous thought that he would take. Why would he do all this if it wasn't to take us into the Holy Land, which is an outrageous thought? But nevertheless, there were those among them. And that's why Moshe takes it upon himself. And when he says, Umatei Elokim B'Yado, Moshe takes it upon himself to go up there. And why V'Gavar Yisrael only when Moshe raised his hand? Because God was not doing this. The fact that they were able to beat back the Bnei Yisrael, as I mentioned about the stick, and the huschus, this was all in the schus of Moshe. Because if Moshe hadn't prayed, that's why Moshe won a Olu Rosh HaGivah, because he had to pray. It was only in the schus of Moshe that they were able to vanquish Amalek at this point in time. They had no schusim at this point in the term of Melchemes Amalek. But nevertheless, that's why they were able to, not only they weren't able to totally destroy, but since they got as far as they did, God said, keep Mocho Emcheh, as opposed to what we see when we get to Parshas Kisetze, the Parshas that we read for Parshas Zohar. It doesn't say Ki Mocho Emcheh. God changes the language. Instead of saying that he will do it, it says, I'm leaving it up to you. Now it's at the end of 40 years in the Midbar, after Vayanasu Osi Esef Amim, that you haven't reached that madrega that you deserve for me to do it, you're going to have to take the bull by the horns, and it's going to be up to you to destroy Amalek. And that's something, unfortunately, we have to live with, and we've been living with that over our shoulders for all these millennia. Thank you, and have a good night.